All right, Jabal, say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Ayin Tes. We're actually going to begin at the last three lines of Ayin Ches on the base. I know that it's going to be a little bit of Chazara, but it's just an easier place to start. So the last three lines, Mali Afar. So remember again, the Mishnah was talking about a very specific case of a Choritz, a ditch in between two Chazeros, in between two courtyards. And the Mishnah said that if the ditch is Amok Yod and Rochav Dalet, if the ditch ultimately is 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide, then Lemaisa Ma'arvin Shtayim Ve'in Ma'arvin Echad. Then you make two Eruvim and not one, because again, the ditch divides between two Chazeros. So the Mishnah then goes on to discuss, what if the ditch is filled in with something? So the question is, does that negate the dimensions of the ditch, thereby uniting the Chazeros? To which the Mishnah essentially says, it depends what the ditch is filled in with. So the Mishnah explains that if the ditch, again, just a quick review, if the ditch was filled with kash otev, and if it was filled with straw or stubble, then lemaisa, the Gemara says, that doesn't really fill in the ditch. The ditch is still considered to be open, since those items are items that would normally be removed, items that would normally be used and removed from the ditch. Therefore, they're not bottled to the ditch. However, mile afa otzroros, but if you filled it in with dirt or with pebbles, then ma'arvin echad ve'im ma'arvin shnayim. Then the assumption is that if you fill it in with dirt, dirt is going to remain in the ditch, and therefore lemaisa, that diminishes the dimensions of the ditch, thereby uniting the chaseros, and they make one eruv. So says the Gemara, mile afar, if you filled in the ditch with dirt, va'afilu b'stama. So the Gemara says, is that to say that even if you did it stam without any specific intent? Now what does that mean? Look at Rashi, Rabbi Sam. Va'afilu b'stama, second to last Rashi. De'lo yadina ish shakil su ilo. So Rabbi Sam, what the Gemara now is suggesting is the following. When you go ahead and you fill in that ditch with dirt, so there are two possibilities. Possibility A, or actually three possibilities. Possibility A is you indicate that you're leaving it there. You make a declaration, I'm leaving it there. Possibility B is you say, I'm not leaving it there, I'm removing it. And possibility C is you say nothing. You say nothing. See, interestingly enough, so in possibilities A and C, A and B, those are much easier. We know exactly what your intent is. Possibility C, when you say nothing, that's the interesting case. The Gemara wants to, so now, what's interesting is the Mishnah does not distinguish between these cases, which leads the Gemara to assume, afilu b'stama, you're telling me then that even if I place dirt in the ditch, without obviously placing the dirt before Shabbos, right? So even if I place dirt in the ditch, and I did not explicitly express what my intent is, the assumption is what? That I'm leaving the dirt there, and therefore that diminishes the dimensions of the ditch, therefore the chatzeros are united. So Gemara says, is that true? That leaving dirt in an area stum without any explicit intent negates the dimensions of the area? V'hatana, but we learned, bayis shenilu tevenot tzoros, if you have a home that was filled with straw or with pebbles, ubitlo, and bitlo means you are mevatot, which means that you made the intent, you had the intention, you stated the intent that you're going to leave it there. So bottle, then it's bottle to the home. We'll say, what is it talking about? Look at Rashi. Bias. Last Rashi on the daf, two last lines. Shetumas meis besocho. You have a home in which you have a corpse inside of it. Umel'uhu afar otzuaros. And what happens? You fill the home with dirt or with pebbles. Ubitlo, and then you're mevatel it. So again, you say that the dirt and the pebbles are staying there. So mevatel, then the dirt and the pebbles are considered as if they're part of the home. Now who cares? So it matters for the following reason. V'havi tumarutzutza, she'in la ohel la'atzma, u'bokaz ba'ola adrakia, v'hamahil ala gag tame, v'chol tumas she'in la ohel tefach, bokaz ba'ola adrakia, kid'amar barakos. We'll say a very interesting halacha in tumas ohel. The halacha is, we know that under normal circumstances, if a mace is under a roof, so the roof contains the tumah. On one hand, everything under the roof becomes tumah, but the roof also contains the tumah within the structure. That's only assuming what? That there is at least a tefach of space in between the mace and the roof. But for argument's sake, if there's no space in the home, then it's what's called the tumah is ola ubokas. Just as an aside, that's, you remember a couple of years ago, there was the whole controversy about the flight paths of certain halal flights over cemeteries. So I've wondered to yourself, why are they worried about tumah thousands of feet up? Because remember, in Eretz Yisrael, they don't bury in caskets, right? They bury in the earth. Which means, see, when you bury in a casket, one of the advantages of the casket is there is often a tefach of space in between the mace and the lid of the casket, which is able to contain the tumah inside. So tumah is not ola abol kas. When you bury directly in the earth, there is no ohel, and therefore the tumah is ola ubol kas. It goes up. So that's the mission is referring. That's the Gemara is referring to over here. So now you have a home. You have a home in which you had a corpse. You had a home in which you had a corpse, and the home was filled up with dirt. You filled the home with the person's dead in there. You filled the home with dirt after the person died. Right? If you filled the home with right before the person died, it's a different Gemara. Right? So the Gemara says over here, so the guy died, you filled up the home with dirt, and now what? And now there's no tapach of space. So the Gemara says, but if you look at the law, so again, we'll say, we don't really care right now about the Tulantara. What we care about is the placement of the dirt in the home. So the Gemara says, Vahatnan, Bayis Shemil Uhu Teben, Soros, if you fill a home with dirt or with straw with pebbles, Ubitlo. Rabbi said, Bitlo means what? Bitlo means what? You actively negated it, which means that you actively said, I'm not moving this dirt. Then what? Then in that case, Lamaisa, then the dirt becomes part of the home. And again, for Tumah purposes, what that tells us is the Tumah's Ola Ubokas. It shoots straight up and goes continuously up. So the Gemara darshan to that, based on that, bitlo in, top of Ayin Tes, low bitlo, good morning. So right. So what do we see from here? We see from here, we'll say that when does the dirt become part of the structure? Only when you actively negate it. But if you did not negate it, then what? Then it would not become part of the permanent structure. Take a look at the top Rashi. Lo bitl, lo batl. If you did not actively negate it, then it would not become batl. Ve'ein ha'tuma bokas lemala min agag sheish olatz. And I will say the ramifications after tuma and tara means that if you are not mevatl, then what? Then we don't see the dirt as part of the permanent structure. If we don't see the dirt as part of the permanent structure, then what? Then what? Is it a space? If it's a tabach of space, then what? Then the tumah is contained within the structure and does not shoot upward. So we'll say, for our purposes over here, again, like I said, we're not worried about tumah and tara, but this contradicts our Mishnah. Because the Mishnah seems to indicate that what? That when you go ahead and you put dirt into that ditch, even if what? Even if you didn't say anything, right? We assume that the placement of the dirt means that you're leaving it there, and that negates the dimensions of the ditch. This is a Mishnah Maseches Olos. From the Mishnah Maseches Olos, it sounds like, no, the only time that the dirt becomes part of the structure is when you're actively mevatel it. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav, so it's a kasha. These are the kind of kashas that keep you rolling. You can't sleep at night with these kind of kashas. So Baruch Hashem, we're going to resolve it. Amar Rav Huna, Man Tana Ohalos. Rav Huna says, who is the author of the Mishnah Ohalos? Rabbi Yossi, it's Rabbi Yossi. Okay, so the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi, if it's Rabbi Yossi, Ipcha Shaminalei. We actually have Rabbi Yossi on record as saying just the opposite. This Sanya, Rabbi Yossi says, Teven ve'in asid lifnoso. If you have straw, now again, same case, you're filling the home, this is back to the Tumah case, you're filling the home with straw. And what happens? Ve'in asid lifnoso. In asid lifnoso means, Rabbi Yossi, that you have no intentions of removing it. Rashi says, Teven, mil'u teven, you fill the home with straw. The Yodin Anu She'ino Tzarech Lo Mikol Makom Lo Bitlo Befeirish. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. This is what we'll call circumstantial bitl. So circumstantial bitl means what? That I did not make any kind of statement. I did not indicate verbally that I'm leaving it there, but it's known circumstantially that what? That I have no need for this straw. So Bipashto, circumstantially, it's clear that I have no intention of removing this straw. Hari hu kistam offer ubatl. Then it's like stam offer, it's like stam dirt, and therefore it's batl. Look at Rashi. Hari hu kistam offer. It's like dirt that we don't know if you're going to remove it or not. This stame bottle. Because we'll say in Rabbi Yossi's worldview, stam offer. When you fill a structure with dirt, we assume that what? The assumption is that you're leaving that dirt. Ubatel, however, offer the asid lifnoso. Back in the Gemara, we'll finish Rest Rashi in just a moment. Offer the asid lifnoso. But if you fill the home with dirt and it's clear circumstantially that you intend on moving that dirt. Again, Rashi says, Afar, V'yodin anushi faneo de las tamo. We know that his intention is to move the dirt. Harihu kistam teven, velo batel. That's like a case of stam teven, right? Stam teven, and therefore it's not batel. So we'll say, what do we see from here? So go back to that Rashi, Harihu kistam offer. You know that Rashi, Amad Rabbi Yossi, offer stam batel. Stam teven, she'in anu yodin mistrach litlo lo batel. Well, so what do we see from here? That in Rabbi Yossi's view, stam offer. When you fill up a structure with dirt, the default assumption is that the dirt is going to stay there. So Moshe said, now you see the kasha. We had a Mishnah, all those, follow this train of thought. We had a Mishnah, all those. The Mishnah, all those said that if you fill a home with afar, if you're mevatel of the afar, then we consider the dirt like it's there. It's mevatel of the dimensions of the home. The tumas ola ubokas. Rav Huda wanted to say, whose opinion is that? Rabbi Yossi. Igmar says, Rabbi Yossi is on record elsewhere as saying what? That in fact, afar is the one thing that's considered to be stam. That we assume that when you put afar, you put dirt somewhere, even if he doesn't expressly articulate that he's leaving the afar there, the assumption is the afar is there. So therefore, the Mishnah Olos is not Rabbi Yossi. Ela Om Rav Asi, man tane eruvin Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Igmar says, Who is the author of our Mishnah? Whose opinion is being reflected in our Mishnah? Erevin, that's Rabbi Yossi. Because what did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah, remember, you have your ditch in between two chatzeros, and the ditch is 10 tefachim deep, and 4 tefachim wide. And what did the Mishnah say? Miluhu afar, if you filled it in with dirt, what did the Mishnah say? Right, it's bottled, and it unites it, right? We consider the ditch as if it's not there. It unites the two chatzeros. Even if what? Even if you didn't express your intent to leave the afar in the dirt, to leave the afar in the ditch. Whose opinion is that? That's Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara says, Rav Huna b'Rit Rav Yoshua Amar, Rav Huna b'Rit Rav Yoshua gives a different answer. He says, Tuma Ashabis Karamis. So once I remember, what the Gemara wanted to do was the Gemara wanted to bring a kasha on our Mishnah from a Mishnah on Olos that dealt with Tuma and Tara. So now comes along Rav Huna b'Rit Rav Yoshua and says, come on, you can't compare Tuma and Shabbos. Hanach Isir Shabbos. The laws of being mevatel an object by Shabbos and by Tuman Tara are two different things. Why is Rav Huna b'Rit Rav Yoshua? Because even if you have a wallet, even a wallet, somebody is mevatel. We'll say, what does that mean? That on Shabbos, the laws of Bittah are often governed by what? The laws of Muktza. What you're permitted to move, what you're not permitted to move. So for example, if you have dirt in that ditch, it could be that on Matzah Shabbos, on Sunday, Monday, you plan on moving it out because you're going to build something. But there's one thing that's clear, which is, on Shabbos, you're not touching it. So because of that, says the Gemara, where as opposed to the laws of Tuman Tara, where the identity of that dirt has to be known right now to know if it's part of the house or not, On Shabbos, by default, that dirt is bottle, by dint of the fact that what? That it's going to be muktzah. The Haraya, he says that even if you have a wallet, right? I left my wallet. The truth is, we saw Masechet Shabbos and it's not so posh. There are other ways of dealing with these situations, but he's giving an example. You know, I leave my wallet, of course, Baruch Hashem, it has wads of $100 bills in it. So I'm saying, you know, so I'm going ahead and leaving it there. So again, even though that's obviously an item of value, but what? But of course, for Shabbos, it's bottle. I'm not touching it. So therefore, he says you can't compare Shabbos and Tumah because it's two different criteria. So therefore, it's not a contradiction. In the laws of Tumah and Tara, I have to know right now, what's your intention with the dirt? Are you leaving the dirt there? Are you not leaving the dirt there? If you're leaving the dirt there, it's part of the home. If it's part of the home, Tumah's Ola Bakas. If you're not leaving the dirt there, there's a tabak of space. Contains the Tumah in the roof. When it comes to Shabbos, when I look at that ditch filled with dirt on Shabbos, there's one thing that's clear, and that is that dirt is not going anywhere, at least for Shabbos. Therefore, by definition, that's enough to negate the dimensions of the ditch and unite the two chatzeros. Rav Ashi says, "By isachoritz karamis." Rav Ashi also agrees. You're comparing apples and oranges, but he doesn't focus on Tumah and Shabbos. He focuses on a home versus a choritz versus a ditch. Bishlam choritz limit miyekoi, ela bayis limit miyekoi. So comes along Rav Ashi, makes a different distinction. A ditch, it's normal to store dirt in a ditch. It's normal to put dirt in a ditch. It's not normal to put dirt in your house. So therefore, Rav Ashi comes along and says that when we have a ditch filled with dirt, that's normal. And therefore what? Therefore, stam, we could assume that what Rabbi said? That the person intends on leaving it there. Versus when you fill up your home with dirt, who ever heard of such a thing like that? So the only time we could say that dirt is part of your home is when you expressly articulate that dirt is going to remain a part of your home. But in the absence of that express articulation, then the mice, we can't assume that dirt is going to remain a part of your home. So both sides, what comes out essentially, what the Gemara essentially says is that la mice, the Mishnah on all those, does not pose a contradiction to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Yossi, that stam offer is considered to be is considered to be batel. But then the Gemara says you don't really even need to get into all this because Shabbos and Tumah are two different things. Either Shabbos and Tumah are two different things, or Bayis and Chorus are two different things. But either way, the Mishnah and all those does not pose a problem for our Mishnah and Eruv.
I see this in Gemara Sukkah also, right?
That is correct. That is correct with Afar. Same exact discussion. So the Gemara goes weiter. Nasan alav nesa shiroch of dalet. So remember again, the Mishnah, this is not the case in the Mishnah, is again you have these two chatzeros. The two chatzeros are divided again, same thing, by a ditch. Then it's 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide. In this case, instead of filling in the ditch, what you did is you put the nesa, you put a board, a plank, across the ditch, and the plank itself is 4 tefachim wide. It's 4 tefachim wide. So the Mishnah says, if you went ahead and you did that, then what? Then lemaisa, you have to make one eruv. Make one eruv, not two. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, lo shanu ela shanasan l'rachvo. This is only talking about a case where you place the length of the plank across the width of the ditch, which is what we assume we read the Mishnah. So you're placing the plank across the ditch to walk across the ditch. Listen to this. Ava l'arko, but if you placed the length of the plank across the length of the ditch, then afilu kol shehu nami, then even any size of the plank would be okay to diminish the dimensions. Sharmiya to midag, because you have diminished the dimensions from that. So we'll say, what is this talking about? If you have the picture books in front of you, so you can see this is picture 270. Picture 270. So very simply, and Rashi highlights this as well. So essentially, remember, the case that we were assuming beforehand is where you're placing the plank across the ditch. Across the ditch. Now what the Gemara is saying is over here, let's say you put two pegs on one side of the ditch and you place the plank across on those pegs. Even if the plank measures very little, what has placement of the plank effectively done? It's diminished the width of the ditch. So the ditch is no longer 4 tefachim wide. Once you diminish the dimensions, then what? Then by definition, this is no longer a ditch that divides between the chateros, and they'd have the ability to make one eruv should they choose. Okay? So the Gemara goes back to Amr, Nasan alav nesa shiroch of da, I'm sorry. V'chein shnei gustaros zu keneged zu. So if you remember again, I will say again, if you're looking in the picture books, this was picture 269. So remember again, the Mishnah dealt with this other case of shnei gustaros. Beis gustaros, Rabbi Osai, remember you had these homes in Rosh Sarabim that had balconies. And now again, let's say you put one of these planks from balcony to balcony. So we'll say there are two different possibilities as to how this case actually works. Either it's talking about homes on the same side of the Rosh Sarabim, and you're placing balconies. You have these balconies facing, not really facing each other, but opposite each other, on the same side of the Rosh Sarabim, and you're taking this plank, and you can walk balcony to balcony, or it's talking about across the Rosh Sarabim. Either way, it's the same concept. But the idea is, you're taking these homes that are not connected, and now connecting them balcony to balcony with a plank. So the Mishnah said, same idea in this case, that Lemaisa, if you went ahead and you put the plank from one to the other, they could go ahead and make one Eruv if they would like. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, Had Amrit Zu Keneged Zu In, Zu Shelo Keneged Zu Lo, V'Zu Lamala Mi, so the Rava comes along and says, this is only if what? This is only if the balconies are opposite each other. But if the balconies are not opposite each other, then Lemaisa, this type of arrangement with putting the plank from one to the other would not work. So the Gemara says, V'zu lamalam izu nami lo amran, ela shiyesh bein ze leze shlosha tfachim. Aval ein bein ze leze shlosha tfachim, gustura akumahi. And also the Gemara says, and when we say that you can't do it from one balcony that's higher to one balcony that's lower, that's only if what? The balconies are not within 3 tefachim of each other. But if the balcony, now also, what does it mean the balconies are not within 3? The balconies are, of course, not within 3 tefachim of each other, the height. If the height differential is less than 3 tefachim, then what's Rabbi Osai? Then that's inconsequential, that's lavud. So essentially, the Gemara says that although the way the Mishnah is setting up the case only works if the balconies are literally opposite each other, the Gemara says, just understand there could be a little bit of a height differential. How much of a height differential? 3 tefachim. Because as long as it's within 3 tefachim, the Gemara says, then that'll be what we call a gustura akumahi. Gustura akuma means a crooked balcony. So I'll say essentially a crooked balcony means that the height differential is within three, but halachically, any differential that's within three tefachim is halachically inconsequential, and you would be able to make an eruv between those two balconies. Okay, says the Mishnah. Matvan. Shebein shtei chazir. So if you have a matvan, what's a matvan? Rabbi Osai says the Mishnah, Godish shel tavan, a haystack. So a haystack umafsik up in irachov kalachatziros. So also an interesting case. So now you have a haystack in between two chatziros, in between two courtyards, and what happens? Gavoa asar tefachim, and the haystack is 4 tefachim tall. 10 tefachim tall. Okay. So now what happens? Ma'arvin shnayim ve'in ma'arvin echad. So we'll say in this case, the haystack literally acts as a mechitza, and therefore again in the two chatzeros, you can only make two, meaning the haystack divides the chatzeros, and therefore you can make two eruvin, you may not join in one eruv. Interestingly enough, ilu ma'achilin mekan, ve'ilu ma'achilin mekan. And interestingly enough, however, everyone, each side of the chatzer, each chatzer, can take hay from their own side of the stack. Look at Rashi. They can go ahead and take from the haystack and give straw to their animal. So this is actually very interesting. So I might have thought, what Rashi is pointing out here is, I might have thought that we shouldn't let anyone take straw. Why? Because what's going to happen if people take straw for Shabbos? You could diminish the dimensions. They both say, what happens if you diminish the dimensions? They effectively become one chatzer. What's the problem? They're one chatzah without an eruv, which would then mean no one could carry. So I might have thought, hands off the haystack, right, until Shabbos is over. Kamashmon, we say they could each give their animals from the haystack. We're not worried about this. Listen, this is very interesting. So remember, we're talking about now a very large haystack, right? So this is a haystack that's 10 tefachim high, but it goes across the entire area of the chatzer. So remember, Rabbi Osei, you've already seen, in order for an opening to be considered a breach, how big does it have to be? It has to be 10 amos. It has to be 10 amos across. 10 amos across, right? So no, remember, there's a difference between a Pesach and a breach, right? A Pesach is an opening. An opening gives you the right to go ahead and make one joint chatzer, but the opening does not create an obligation to make one joint eruv, right? So again, it's a very important distinction. When you have a Pesach between two chatzeros, remember we've seen these last four Mishnayos, that gives you the license to make one eruv, does not create an obligation to make one eruv. However, if you have a pirtza, if you have a breach in the wall of the mechitza, then what? Then you have no choice but to make one eruv, because again, that pirtza is so big that the two areas are joined. So what the Gemara is saying over here is like this. Really, the only thing we have to worry about in the haystack is that you're going to have a pirtza, that maybe a breach of 10 amos is going to occur. And Rashi says, animals don't eat that much over the course of Shabbos, over one day, that we have to be concerned for that eventuality. It's interestingly enough, we let everybody eat from their side of the haystack. The Gemara goes on. However, again, if the haystack, now again, we'll say the one part you do have to worry about is what? Is the height. Right? So again, what happens if the height is diminished? In that case, Rabbi Osai, again, if the height of the haystack is diminished from 10, then Rabbi Osai, then you no longer have a mechitza. If you no longer have a mechitza, then it's one area. And in that case, again, Rabbi Osai, they have to make one eruv and they can't make two separate eruvim. Fine. Says the Gemara. Am Ravuna. So Rav Huna comes along and says that true, we allow the animals to go ahead and eat from the haystack, but one thing we don't allow is that the owner of the animal may not actively take straw himself from that stack and put it into the kupa, put it into his basket. Look at Rashi. You will not allow the owner of the animal to actively take it with his hands and to put it into his kupa. Dilma shakel tuva umamitle. Interestingly enough, we're not worried about the animals eating too much over Shabbos, but we are worried about what? We're worried about the owners going in and putting too much into their utensils. May asar become a talta l'chazra, asar s'machilafai. So the Gemara says, ulo ukmi shari, Is that to say then that to go ahead and lo'uk min habosei means to place the animal by the haystack? Does that mean to place the animal by the haystack itself would be permitted on Shabbos? Look at Rashi. So now you're telling me, now the Rafun comes along and tells me the owner can't actively take hay from the haystack himself to put it into a skupa, but what he can do apparently is he can place the animal by the haystack, Rashi says. Interestingly enough, but apparently, although we don't let him take the hay himself, the straw himself, we would let him place the animal by the haystack, and apparently by placing the animal by the haystack, we're not concerned that he's going to take it himself. Ravuna said, well, 1 second, Rabbi Chanina, Ma'amid Adam Esbehemto Agabe Asabim Shabbos, Ve'in Ma'amid Adam Esbehemto Agabe Muktza B'Shabbos. Well, that's a very interesting statement. Rabbi Chanina said that a person could go ahead and bring his animal to Asavim. Asavim are grasses, and allow the animal to graze there, but a person can't bring his animal to something that is Muktza and allow the animal to graze there. What's the Pshat Rabosai? So what the Gemara is saying over is something fascinating. Rabbi Chanina is saying something fascinating. You could allow your animal to graze on grass. Now, Rabosai, remember, grass obviously is Mechobel Karko, is attached to the ground, and yet we allow the owner to bring his animal to graze, because what are we not concerned about? We're not concerned that the owner is going to come to pluck the grass himself. Why not? Because plucking the grass would be an isur d'oraisa, biblical prohibition, and we're not concerned that the owner is going to do that. However, we don't allow the individual to come and bring his animal to graze by mukta items. Why? Because then we would be concerned that what? That the owner will move those items. Look at Rashi Rabosai. I'm Rabbi Chanina. We allow the owner to bring his animal to grass that is attached to the ground and to eat. And we're not concerned that the owner is going to uproot the grass himself and feed it to his animal. Why? Because again, we assume that people are vigilant about the Yisrum of Shabbos. About Yisrum Muktza, Kile, when it comes to Muktza, Muktza is only rabbinic, and therefore maybe a person will be a little bit more lenient with it. And therefore we're concerned that what? That the owner will actually move the items with his hand. So we just said before. So here you have the haystack. We'll say the haystack is mukta. Why is the haystack mukta? Because again, we'll say the maisid was set aside ultimately to serve as a mechitza. Right? It was designated as a mechitza. So ultimately, that makes it mukta. Obviously, laws of mukta are not applicable to Yamla. Yamla can do whatever it wants. But the Gemara says, why are we concerned about allowing the owner to take the animal over to the haystack after we see from Rabbi Chanina that although we're not concerned with people violating biblical prohibitions, we are nervous about what? Taking your animal to feed on something that's mukta, that you may come to what? You may come to move it yourself. To which the Gemara says, no, because here's the case. To call him la ba'apa, the azla va'achla. What's the case of Osai? The case of Osai is where you're not actively leading the animal to the haystack. Rather, what do? You stand in the animal's way, so to speak. So by standing the animal's way, you force it in a particular direction. So you're not actively leading the animal to the haystack, but rather you are standing in the animal's way so that it has no choice but to go to the haystack. So essentially, halachically, that's viewed as the animal going to the haystack of its own volition, right? The owner is not taking it to feed there. The animal is just channeling it in that particular way, and therefore in that case, where the owner is not standing over the animal, there's no fear that it'll come to Matatul Mukza. But we said, Rav Huna said, that the animal could feed from the straw, but the owner may not go ahead and place straw into his receptacle. But we learn, Bayis Shebein Shtei Chatzeros was an interesting case. If you have a home that stands between two Chatzeros, Umil Uhu Teven, and the home is filled with straw. Now I will say again, if you are looking in the picture books, this is an important case. This is picture 273. You have a similar picture in there of a home in between the two cateros with straw. Yeah.
Yes.
That one. What number is it in yours?
Oh, top I in your I. Hey. Is that the one?
Matman Shibin Shti Chaseros, no.
Basically,
yeah, this is it. Tafayin Vav, if you're looking at the illustrated Gemara, Tafayin Vav. So I'll say again. So what you essentially have over here is you have two chaseros. And in the middle of the two chaseros, you have a home. Now, this is not a home in the cont. No one's actually living there. It's more of a storehouse. And the storehouse itself is filled with straw. So now, there are two other homes, one home in each of the other chaseros, that open up into this middle home. So again, middle home that straddles the two chaseros, it literally straddles the line of two chaseros, and a home on each side opens up into this chatzer. That middle home, bless you. That middle home contains straw. Okay? So now, says the Gemara, Bayis Shevein Shtei Chatzeros, a home in between. Again, if you're looking in the picture books, I don't know if I said that to you. This was picture 273. So a home in between two chatzeros. Umiluhu teben. And there is straw. That middle home is filled with straw. Ma'arvin shtayim ve'ein ma'arvin echad. So the two chatzeros must make their own individual eruvin, and they can't go ahead and make one eruv. Look at Rashi Rabosai. It's the second wide line in Rashi. Bayis shevein shtei chatzeros ushnei batim mishtei chatzeros pesuchen lo. What happens? Two homes, one from each chatzer, are open into this middle home. So the Mishnah, the Raisa says that you can only go ahead and make one eruv. We can make two different eruv, one eruv per chatzer, but they can't join in an eruv. But we're not as concerned about eruv. Here's what we're concerned about: echad zet nosin l'sof kupas of yachil, v'zet nosin. Excuse me, zet nosin l'sof kupas of yachil, v'zet nosin l'sof kupas of yachil. So we'll say, what does the Mishnah say here? Each chatzer, each side, could take straw from that middle home and put it into their kupa, put it into their receptacle, and eat it. Nismai tateve. However, again, if the straw is diminished, miyutfachim, from tenfachim, because you also remember, although the Mishnah didn't say this explicitly, this is understood that the pile of straw is tenfachim high, which effectively does what? Effectively goes out and divides the chatzeros. That's why they can't make one joint eruv. But let's say over the course of Shabbos, the height of the straw mechitza becomes diminished. Shnehem asun. In this case, now everybody's in trouble, right? Shnehem asun means what? They're both asur. Now, what does it mean they're both asur? Because now we have a problem. Well, not a problem, but now we have a new reality. The new reality is there's no longer a mechitza. Therefore, the chatzeros are one joint area, but they're one joint area with what? They're one joint area with no eruv, which effectively means what? No one can carry anything in the chatzer, which would then mean no one could take any more straw. So the Mishnah says there's a remedy. What's the remedy? Keitzeruvo, so what can you do? Noel es beso, so we'll say one of the guys, now I guess it's whoever draw the short, literally the short straw, no pun intended, I know it's bad. Whoever draws the short straw goes ahead and essentially relinquishes his rights in the chatzer. How does he relinquish his rights in the chatzer? Noel es beso, so he closes his door. Now his door to what? His door to that middle home. His door to that middle home, which contains the straw. He closes his door to the middle home. Umevatel es rishuso. And he relinquishes his rights in the chatzer. He relinquishes his rights in the chatzer. Who aser? Therefore, the guy relinquishes his rights is aser. The chavero mutter. But the guy to whom he has relinquished, i.e. the other members of the chatzer, are now permitted. The chen atomer, in the similar case applies. Begov shel teven. With a pit or a ditch of straw. Shebein beis tichumei Shabbos. That is between two Shabbos. So again, if you can imagine this case, you have a pit that lies right in the middle of two tchumen. So let's say the tchum line, the tchum line between two different tchumen runs right in the middle of the ditch, and the ditch itself is filled up with straw. So the Gemara says all the halachos that apply to this home filled with straw will apply to the ditch filled with straw that's in between two tchum Shabbos. So we'll say, now again, before we get into the rest of this brisa, what's important for our purposes? Rav Huna began this Gemara by telling me that although the Mishnah said that I'm allowed to go ahead and allow my animal to feed on the pile of straw, what can't I do? I can't go ahead and take from the straw and what? And put it into my basket. What did the brisa just say I can do with the home filled with straw? I can put it in my basket. So the Gemara says, Katani mihas, zenos in the sof kupaso viachil. The zenos in the sukupas of yachil, but also at the end of the day, the Gemara now, the Braisa contradicts Rav Huna, and the Braisa allows for taking up, not only taking up straw to feed the animal, but what? I could actually place it in my basket. To which the Gemara gives a very interesting answer. The Gemara says, Amri, I'll tell you why this is different. In the case of the bais, in the case of the home, kevan di'ika mechitzos v'tikra, ki mifchas minkarale milso. Hacha lo minkarle milso. We'll say it's quite fascinating. What's the concern? What's the concern with people putting it into their baskets? A person's going to take a lot of straw. So the Gemara says, in the case of a home, we'll say here's the chap. When the straw sits in this home, so what do you have? You have a roof. What's the advantage of having a roof? That when the height of the straw pile is diminished, it will become immediately visible. Why? because the roof is there. So you know what the height of the pile is relative to the roof. So when the height of the haystack diminishes, that's clear. And when the height of the haystack diminishes, what's also clear? You no longer have a mechitza. And if you no longer have a mechitza, then what? And you can't carry in the chatzir anymore. However, the Gemara says, in the case where the haystack is outdoors, and therefore there is nothing really to compare the relative height of the haystack to, there's a concern that what? That over the course of Shabbos, everybody's taking from the haystack and putting it into their kupa, people just won't realize that at some point in time, the haystack is no longer yutfakim. Again, obviously, if it's five tefachim, people will realize that. But there is that nuanced height between 10 and 9, where a person might not realize it. Therefore, again, when the haystack is outdoors, the halacha is you can allow your animal to eat from it, but what? But the owner, the person, can't take the hay, or they can't take the straw, put it into a scoopa, because a person takes a lot more like that. However, when it's indoors, then, and therefore you have a way to gauge the height of the stack, therefore you could even put it into your kupa.
Does the reduction below 10 tefachim have to be over a 3 tefach or more area, or else?
4 tefach or more area. Four tefach or more area.
So if it's less than 4 tefachim across, then you still
that is correct. That is correct. Nismait ha-teven me'asar tefachim shnei asurin. If the haystack was diminished from a height of 10 tefachim, then both chatzeros are asr. Rabbi Sayyid, when we say asr, what that means is now it's one contiguous area. And the reason why it's asr is because they do not have an eruv. So the Gemara says, ha asara shari. Now it's interesting, the Gemara says, is what? But if the haystack is 10 tefachim, I just want to be clear. Now what the Gemara is doing is the Gemara is going to dissect the Braisa that we just spoke. So now we're going to take a little bit of a vacation from the Mishnah, and now we're focusing on the Braisa. Remember, the Braisa's case is where you have the haystack that's 10 tefachim high in that middle home. That middle home that straddles two chatzeros and two homes, one from each chatzer, both open up into that middle home. So as long as the haystack in the middle is 10 tefachim, that creates a mechitza between the two chatzeros. Therefore, they make two independent eruv, and no joint eruv. And furthermore, the Braisa said that each one can take from the haystack for themselves. But they can even put it into their kupa. So the Gemara says, "Ha asara shari." Now, what's interesting is the only height you require of the haystack is 10 tefachim. Va'afal gav dimidalya tikra tuva. Now, also, here's what's interesting. What the Braisa doesn't talk about is what? Is how high the roof of the structure is. So it sounds like even if the roof of the structure is, 20 tefachim, right, much higher than the haystack, then it would still be fine. Shmamina, what do we learn from this? Mechitzos she'en magios latikra, shman mechitzos. What we learn from this is that a mechitza that does not reach the ceiling is still called what? It's still called mechitza. We'll say, if you remember again, this was ages ago, we had this machlokas about what the status of mechitzos, that if we have a mechitza in an area that is roofed, if that's the right word, roof, then what is the status of the mechitza that doesn't reach the actual ceiling, doesn't reach the roof. So the Gemara says, you see from here, that even if a mechitza doesn't reach the roof, it's still a good mechitza. Rabbi, not necessarily. We're talking about over here what? What kind of case? A case of where the roof of Osai is what? Is 13 tefachim minus a little bit. So we'll say, what does that do? What does that do? So therefore, if the haystack is 10 tefachim high, then what? Then lemaisa, again, it's within 3 tefachim of the rooftop, in which case what? It's lavud. Therefore, that space is considered to be as if a halachically does not exist. So the Gemara says, v'tevan asara, v'rafunabri, afilu tema, bebeis asara. You could even be talking about over here what? Where the roof itself, no. When it says it was a sort of the home itself is only 10 tefachim high. The ceiling is 10 tefachim high. The teven and the straw, sheva umashu, interestingly enough, and the straw itself is 7 and a little bit. The chopachos mishlosha kilavodamin. Because what's at the end of the day, what? Because remember, if the straw itself is 7 and a little bit, and the ceiling itself is 10, then what? Then the haystack is within 3 tefachim of the top of the roof, and therefore it's loved. So Gemara says, "Bishlom la'abaye, hainu diktani me'asara." So we'll say, according to Abaye, the Braisa reads well, because the Braisa speaks about, a haystack that is less than 10 tefachim. So in Abaye's case, it makes sense, because the haystack itself is less than 10 tefachim, but, excuse me, the haystack is 10 tefachim, and the roof itself is a little bit under 13. Ela the Rav Hunabri Rav Yeshua Mayasora, but according to Hunabri Rav Yeshua, says that the haystack is only 7 and a little bit, and the roof itself is 10. So what does it mean? What does it mean? The Bryce talks about the haystack being 10. mitoras asara. It means from the Torah of 10. Meaning that what the Brisa is saying is, lav davka doesn't have to be that the haystack itself is 10, but rather what it has to be is that the collective shear of this mechitza is 10 tefachim. Whether that means the haystack itself is 10, or whether it means that the haystack, including the roof, by utilizing lavud is 10, either way, as long as the dimensions of the mechitza are 10, one way or the other, that creates a separation between the chatzeros. Shnei and asurin. Suppose again, remember the Mishnah said that Lemaisa, if the haystack is diminished over the course of Shabbos, if the height of the haystack is diminished over the course of Shabbos, then the two chaseros are joined, and therefore everything becomes aser. Shmamino, what do we see from here? The urin habon b'Shabbos asurin. Sitches never well said. The Gemara learns out from here that what do you see? That even people who come, even residents who come on Shabbos, have the ability to aser the chaser. I will say, what does that mean? That Lemaisa, when that haystack is diminished below a 10 tefachim, so now everyone else in the chatzar suddenly is a party to these two chatzeros. Because up until now, we're only focusing on the two homes that literally border or that touch this middle third home. Once that mechitza is knocked down figuratively, once that mechitza is diminished, what happens? Now we have to also take into account everyone else who's living in these chatzelos. So the Gemara says, you see from here that even people who enter onto the scene on Shabbos could have a negative impact on the chatzer as well. To which the Gemara says, well, maybe not. Dilma de'im at me'etmol. Not true. Maybe it's talking about a case of where what? Where the haystack was already diminished on Erev Shabbos. So there's no panim chadashos balakan, there's no new residents. Everybody who was a player was already here on Erev Shabbos. Okay. So the Gemara says, Gemara goes weiter. Keitza du oseh, noel uspe, so umavata as reshuso. So both said, now the Gemara says, so what do you do? What happens if indeed the height of the haystack is diminished on Shabbos? So there is something you can do. What can you do? One of the guys decides to yield his rights. So the Mishnah said he does two things. He closes his door to that middle home that has destroyed it. And what else does he do? He yields his rights in the chaser. So the Gemara says, Tarti, do you need to do both of these things? The Gemara is asking, why do you need both? Most of them, what do you need? What's really the only thing you need? You need to yield your rights, right? Bimavatel Yerushus. We spent a lot of time on this. If you yield your rights in the chaser, Gemara, why do you have to lock the door also? To which the Gemara says, Hachi Kamar, this is what it means to say, Oh, Noel es Beso, Oh, Mevatel es Rishuso. You don't need both, you need one of them, right? Either lock your door, because they'll say, essentially, locking your door is what? Locking your door is tantamount to yielding your rights. See, either lock your door and yield your rights, Oh, Mevatel es Rishuso, or actively yield your rights. You don't need both. V'Baisim, the other possibility is, Li'olam Tarti. Maybe you do need both. Why? Kevan Didashbe, or maybe this case is different. Maybe in this case you do really need both. Rabbo said, but you need both for two reasons. Maybe you need both. Why? For my friend to have rights in the chatzer, I have to yield my rights. But in order to ensure that I don't accidentally take straw from that middle home, what do I have to do? I have to lock the door. So the locking of the door is not for the other people. The locking of the door is for Rabbo said, an incredible, powerful statement. Right? I accomplish my yielding of rights through simple, the verbal declaration of yielding my rights. But a person also has to know that sometimes in life, when you get used to doing a certain thing, it's not just enough to say, I'm going to stop doing it, but sometimes you have to learn how to lock the door. So Rashi points out over here, Bibai Simuli Olam Tarti, or the Indian Heter Chadero, to permit my friend in the Chotzer, Bechada Sagi, all I need to do is yield my rights. But for myself, I have to make harchaka for myself. Delo lacy little too late. So both said, the locking of the door is not for the yielding of rights. The locking of the door is to prevent me from transgressing. But in Israel, fine. So the Gemara goes back to who asked the chavero mutter? So both say, in this case, so both said, out two answers. Either possibility is that no, the Gemara is just saying either or. Either lock the door and yield your rights, or possibility two is no, you need both. One is for my friend, the yielding of the rights, and the other is to ensure that I don't violate. So I have to lock the door. So the Gemara says that as a result, I can no longer use the chatzar, but my friend can. Pshita, that's obvious. Lo tzricha de hader idach ubatalei lechavrei. Oh, what's the case of Osai? Or after, so let's say again, I share that middle house with Shimon. So after I yield my rights to Shimon, what does Shimon do? Shimon then Shimon does whatever he has to the chatzar, then what does he do afterwards? Rav Moshe had this before. you could easily manipulate the system. Where let's say you do, you keep on reversing it. So I yield my rights to Shimon. Shimon takes whatever strike he needs home, and then what? And then Shimon yields his rights to me. So I might have. So the Gemara says, "Lo tzricha da hader idach ubatel lechavrei v'hakamash malon de'in mevatlin v'chozer umevatlin." And therefore, one of the lessons that the Bryce is teaching us is what Rabbi said: can't do that. Bittul works once. Okay. You can no backseats, no back and forth. Because also you could easily exploit this. You could keep on being mevatel. You keep on being mevatel back and forth. So therefore, the Gemara says, no, one person has the rights of bittul, and once I'm mevatel, that's it. I lose my rights for the duration of that Shabbos. Dechin ato omer begov shel teven shebein shnei tchumei Shabbos. So too, the Gemara says, if you have a ditch, this is now tchum. We're leaving the chatzer, right? We've left the chatzer, and I remember tchum is around 2,000 amos, and right at the edge of my tchum, there is a pit. So remember, we have case over here is tchum of city A, tchum of city B. Meet, but and they share a ditch. So literally, the line between their two tchumin is in the middle of a ditch, and that ditch is filled with straw. So what do the Mishnah say? It's the same laws as this home that's filled with straw, which means what? Each can go ahead and take straw from the pit. So the Gemara says, Pshita, so what's the chiddush? That's obvious. Pshita, lo tzricha l'Rabbi Akiva, el Rabbi Akiva, da'amar, tchulin da'oraisa. Oh. Because what does Rabbi Akiva say? Well, Rabbi Akiva holds, remember, Rabbi Akiva is a das yochid in this, that Rabbi Akiva holds that the concept of tchum is a biblical prohibition. Biblical prohibition. And therefore, I would have thought, ligzar dilma asi lachlufe. I would have thought that what? That maybe according to Rabbi Akiva holds tchum doraisa, maybe you shouldn't be allowed to take straw from this ditch. Why? Because you may end up, what Rabbi say? You may end up taking straw from the other side of the tchum. And according to Rabbi Akiva, if you end up taking straw from the other side of tchum, then what? Then you have violated a biblical prohibition. Kamash malon, we're not concerned about that. It's kamash malon two things. Kamash malon, not concerned, and kamash malon really don't hold like Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, again, tchum na derabanan. And therefore, because tchum na derabanan, we're not concerned that she may come to take straw from the other side of the tchum. Says the Mishnah. Ketzad mishtat rabbanan. So I'll say, now we're switching gears a little bit. It's actually, it's different. It's very exciting stuff. I'm seeing all of it. It's fascinating. Just the way. I'm telling you, I know you feel it. It's just you're all too humble to express it. I understand. But this is life. Look, you have to understand something. Look how beautiful even that last idea is that you see. The beauty of Torah is that there are profound lessons to be learned even in the mundane. Yeah, well, nothing's mundane. It's all Kodesh.
That was Ari Lerner. So even
in the most seemingly like things that are not lemaisa, not mundane, but not lemaisa. You see over here. Look, if you just keep an open ear, an open eye, and an attentive heart, you'll find it like, amazing. Look at the lesson we just learned. When something is usher, if you really want to make a change in life, and you want to prohibit something to yourself, it's not just enough to say something. You have to make it darim. Right, you have to make protective fences. You have to close the doors. Because if you don't close the doors, then what's going to end up happening? You're going to keep taking the straw. You're going to keep taking... Alright, says the Mishnah. Kate's the Mishnah. So we'll say now we're switching gears a little bit. Now we're going back to Shitof Mavos. So remember again, Shitof... So a Shitof is to a Mavui, what a Erev is to a Chatzer. So remember again, just to reorient ourselves. So homes, you have multiple homes opening up into a common courtyard. And multiple chateros opening up into a common mavoi. A mavoi is an alleyway. And the mavoi led you to Rosh Hasharabin. So just like you have to make an area of chateros, everybody has to join together for a chater, everybody who opens up into a mavoi also has to join together in order to make a mavoi a joint area. So the Gemara says, in the same way that you go ahead and you accomplish Erev Chatzeros through food. Because remember, we'll say, what's the idea? The idea is Mitra Bonon, you can't carry into any Rosh HaSayachid that has joint ownership. So just like, what is an Erev Chatzeros do? What does Erev Chatzeros do? Erev Chatzeros makes it into the ownership of one individual. So the way we do that is we collect food, we place the food in one home, and therefore we assume that home is where?
Very hard formula.
Home is where your food is, right? People say home is where your heart is. That's for Jews, right? Home is where your food is. So if all of us have food in one place, therefore that is considered to be the chatzer of one domicile, and because of that, it gives us all the ability to carry into it. Same thing with the mavui. Now, before the Erev, you have multiple chatzeros opening up into the mavui, which means that midrabanon, I can't carry it above. So what do? We join together through food. So we'll see, although there are certain similarities between Shituf Muvaos and Erev Chatzeros, there are also certain significant differences. So look at the Gemara, Mishnah. Ketad Mishtatun Mimavoy. How do you make a Shituf Muvaos? Maniach Asachavis. So we'll say it's actually interesting. So one guy, see, now here's the complicated thing. In a Chatzer, it's easy to go door to door because you don't have that many people living in a Chatzer. In a Mavoy, it's much more difficult because what could happen? You have multiple chatzeros with multiple residents opening up into one alleyway. So you're going to start going door to door for every single person. It's an incredible avoda. So the Mishnah advises something else. One guy comes up, whoever it is, he's the president of the Mavoy Association. So what happens? He goes ahead, maniach esachavis. He goes ahead and he takes a barrel of food. Rashi says, mishalom yirtza. So I take a barrel of my food. Well, let's make it wine, just to keep it easy. So I go ahead, I have a barrel of wine, and what do I say? Va'omer, hare zu l'chol b'nei mavoi. I make a declaration, this barrel, I've now given this to all of the residents of the mavoi. U'mezakelohen, and I will say, interestingly enough, when you own something, and you want to go ahead and give over ownership over it to someone else, so it's not just enough to say, I give it over to everybody else. Why? Because in order for their ownership to occur, there has to be a transference of rishus. I can't be the makne and the kone. I can't be the giver and the recipient for someone else. So there has to, I can be the giver, it's mine, but somehow now there has to be acquisition. Now remember, we'll say, I don't need everybody to acquire it. Why? All I need is one person to acquire it on behalf of everyone else. Why? Because there's a concept of zachin la'adam shelo befanav. There's a concept that you could affect a transaction for someone else, but it's beneficial for them, even if they're not here. So how do I do it? And I could go ahead and have someone else acquire it for them. Either I could use my adult children. The idea is my adult children are independent of me. Or my Hebrew servant or maidservant. We'll discuss why these people can do it. Or my wife. So apparently with the Mishnah thing, these are all people who are technically independent of me. But I can't go ahead and what? I can't use my minor children, like my minor children, my young children, or through my non-Jewish servant or maidservant. Why? Because those are all property. Right? Remember, every Kanani, every Kanani, excuse me, or Shivcha Kananis, those are property. So they're mine. They're an extension of me. My minor children, extension of me. Mipnei sheyadan kiyado, because their hand is like my hand. So the Gemara is supposed to just say something interesting, just so you should know where this comes up, is, you know, whenever we go ahead and make
That was brilliant.
All right, we'll go back to it. All right, this is what happens. I don't take time to think during the shiur. Okay, says the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda. Right, Amar Yehuda. Chavis shel shetufei mavoz tzarech la'agbiyam min hakarka tefach. So Rav Yehuda says that when you're going ahead and you have this barrel of wine that you're using for the shituf of mavoz, if you want to go ahead and give it over to someone else, Rabosai, so not only do you need a third party to acquire it on behalf of the other residents of the Chatzeros, but what else do they have to do? They have to do hagbah. They have to lift it up. There has to be some type of act. Remember, Rabosai, this is one individual acting on behalf of all of the other residents of the Chatzer. Sometimes they have to be independent of the person who owns the barrel right now, but they actually have to do a maiski, they have to do hagbah. Rashi says, I'm sorry?
The others have to give.
No, because it's Zachim Adam Shlo Befanov. That's the idea. They don't have to give authority. Well, again, we'll get into the mechanics of this as we go on. Rash is Kisho Mezakya Oselohed, Dechal Kama Demancha Birshusei, Lohavi Zichia. So we'll say, in the same way that I, the person who owns the barrel, can't be the person who acquires it on behalf of everyone else, I also can't give it over to them when, while it's still sitting, because the assumption is, where's the barrel? The barrel's in my Rishus. So therefore, what has to happen? And therefore, again, the other individual who's acquiring it has to actively lift it up on their behalf as well. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Hana Tarti Mili Savi de Pompadisa Amrinu. There are two things that the elders of Pompadisa, Pompadisa was a major city of Torah in Babel. So Rava says there are two things that the elders of Pompadisa said. Chadaha. One of them was this very thing, and Rashi just points out over here that who are the elders of Pupadisa? Rabbi Huda v'Yeshiva, so it's Rabbi Huda and Yeshiva. So what did they say? So Chadaha, one was the thing we just said, that if I'm giving over a barrel to other residents of the Chatzer, not only does there have to be someone independent of me acquiring it on their behalf, but what? That individual has to lift up the barrel as well. Idach, the other thing they said, HaMekandesh, when one makes Kiddush, Im Tom Melo Lugmav, if he tastes a cheek full, Yotza, he's Yotze, Ve'im Lav, and if not, Lo Yotze, he's not Yotze. So the elders of Pompadisa, nothing to do with our Sugya, but the elders of Pompadisa said that for Kiddush, you have to drink at least a Mali Lugmav, one cheekful man. Tosas points out, interestingly enough, the straight translation of Mali Lugmav seems to indicate cheekfuls, which refers to your two cheeks. Tosas points out that it actually means one cheekful. So the amount of wine you have to drink immediately upon making Kiddush, was that the real halach is you're really supposed to drink a Rabias. But if you don't drink a Rabias and you only drink a Mali Lugmav, you go to Kiddush like that. Am Rav Chaviva, ha nami savi te pompati samrinu. Rav Chaviva said, there's another ruling of the elders of Pupadisa. What did they say? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Osin Medura Lachaye B'Shabbos. You can make a fire for a woman who has just given birth on Shabbos. I will say, obviously, making a fire is one of the 39 melachos. So you could go ahead and you could do the assumptions that a woman who has given birth is a cholah sheyesh bo sakana. She's in life-threatening situation. And so if she says that she needs the warmth, you're permitted to go ahead and make the fire for her. Savar Mine, now, based on this ruling, we assumed L'chayin l'chol l'lo, that this only applies to a woman who has given birth, but would not apply to other sick people. Furthermore, b'mosa gishamim in, b'mosa chamalo, it would only apply during the rainy season, i.e. during the winter, when a person objectively needs warmth, but not during the summer. So itmar amr adchibar adon amr shmuel, not necessarily true. Hikis dam, even if a person engaged in bloodletting, then it's stunning, and a person became chilled. Now, Rabbi said the assumption was that after bloodletting, a person was in a quasi-state of sakana. So if a person gave blood, and what happened? And they became chilled, right? So we're concerned that they could become deathly ill. What's that halacha? Osin lo medura b'Shabbos. If they, right, we go ahead and we make for them a fire even on Shabbos. V'afilu b'kufas tamos. Bless you. And even when? Even in the middle of the summer, right? Kufas Tammuz is a summer solstice, even in the middle of the summer. So what do you see from here, Rabbi Osai? That although the elders of Pupadisa phrased their ruling as dealing with a woman who has given birth, that's just an example. It actually applies to any person who's in a state of sakana. Not only that, even if you're in the dead of summer, even if you're in the middle of summer and it's hot outside, you can still go ahead and make fire for them if what? If they say actively that they need it, or if the doctor says that they're cold and they need to be warmed. Right? So we'll say, no, we'll stop over here. We're not finished with the Savi Pompadisa. There's still more. We'll pick up right over here tomorrow, Mirat Hashem. Shakoyach.